You're about to enter into a world where all those classic movie monsters are still alive. A time when scary movies were fun for the whole family. And a place where the only colors you'll find are black, white, and shades of gray. Welcome to the Miniverse.
Oh, she's the cat's meow.
What if she stole the pad?
Hate you people.
Damn, I didn't. Can we do it again?
You so Sherman, you miss
okay,
it.
One, two, three, right, four.
And we're back. I think we're going to make
a part of the crowd now.
I'm a joiner. Thank
very
you.
Good,
all
good.
Future guests are going to be forced to do that with us as well.
It's one of the daily mantras for the Cult of the Kais. And we're back.
All praise be to the Kais.
So say
well, bum. I would like to reintroduce our guest,
he
Daniel
is
Roosevelt Shervin. I'm sorry, I'm not your mama.
Wow. That's he's right there.
Am I still allowed to call you by your Christian name?
That's right.
The story that I have that I want to tell everybody before we start interviewing Dan, before we get to Dan's introduction of into the Mimiverse, I want to tell everybody my story of Daniel Shervin's
exploits. Oh,
my introduction to
hey,
Shervin.
Good girl.
It was kind of funny actually. When Chris cast the movie and he's getting ready to set up the shooting schedule, he sends out a mass email to everybody that's involved, and so Chris, being the man that he is, you know, writes it at 3 o'clock in the morning because that's when he's up.
It's true.
And so he sends out this email, and everybody else is long asleep and doesn't
yeah,
see it until the morning.
He's got children, and that's the only free time he's got.
True.
Sleep is for the weak.
Right.
So
I must be really weak.
For Attack of the Moon Zombies, I had met Dan just briefly for Cave Women on Mars at the premiere. I just shook his hand and said, "Hey, man, great job." And he's like, "Thanks." And that was it. And
that was Daniel. I think from now on, so we remember that we're calling Daniel, we should all call each other by our full names, so it should be Rhubarb, Marker, Daniel, Christopher,
all right,
Michael Kaiser.
No, just the Kais.
El Kaiso.
El Kaiserino.
Oh, boy.
So Shervin shook my hand, and you know he said thanks and whatever. And so Chris sends out this email basically saying, hey, welcome to the Mimiverse. You know, we're going to start shooting this. There's the scenes and learn your lines and blah, 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 blah. Shervin responds back with probably the funniest mass email I've ever read. He basically leads off by, saying, if I'm going to be involved in a Christopher R. Mim film, I want to make sure that my middle initial is involved too. So he basically called Chris Christopher Pretentious R. Mim. And I chuckled at my desk for about 10 minutes after that. I thought it was just one of the funniest things. And I knew when we were working on Attacking the Moon Zombies that this guy was just going to be a cut-up. And
it
he
sets the tone.
Truly was.
It sets the tone.
Now, I'm sorry. Dan Yol Roosevelt Shervin.
Yes, sir.
Never screws around on set. He's the most focused individual.
He's laughing right now.
I have ever worked with.
I wasn't.
I will say,
in my mind.
I will say this.
Tread lightly.
My professional behavior.
All right.
On Chris's films is different than any other set I've ever been on.
Because my sets are the most fun.
It's because Chris is not.
I'm not professional at all.
To some degree,
when
no.
When Shervin's around.
When we get the job done, it's good. It's really good. I think we do a heck of a job, but you're absolutely right. when I'm on your set, I'm hanging out with my buddies. I am not. You know, his stepdaughter throws cashews at me when I get my lines wrong. I retaliate with an egg salad sandwich.
It was what was at hand.
But and that should be said is that is we always, because you know our sets are so, the crews are so small and everyone's sort of just there to be there, and they're sort of volunteering.
Yeah.
I feel like a jerk if I'm just like, keep it together, people. Come on, this is serious. It's not. We're having
if
a good time.
Like that, you would be. I would crucify you.
I could do the Kermit. Dang it, people!
There you go. Just, okay, that's better.
You know, we just kind of have a good time. I mean, we
as
measure.
As you can tell from the outtakes.
Yeah, we make a point to add extra time on to shoots because it's just. Well, and there's some people who come around and, you know, there have been some actors over the years who came in and were just like, this is so frustrating because I want to stay focused. And it's like, yeah, we're focused enough.
And
we're getting it done.
And I got
to
tell you, I was a little bit before I knew Shannon really and Doug really. I was like, damn it, why was Liz throwing stuff at me? And I lost my cool because, like, there's people who I've met before, Sid. I mean, I remember the first time I went to Sid's house, Chris didn't really know her. He's like, dude, I don't know this lady. She's inviting me to her house. Will you please be my wingman so I don't end up in her basement dead? It's true. I'm going to bust it.
I made a joke about her last
week.
So.
It's true, but we found out Fred Flintstone is in her basement. But, you know, it's one of those things. And now that I know how cool they are, I mean, how laid back Doug and Shannon are, I could care less that happened. But at the time, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have to work with these people on a professional set sometime. Oh my, what? You know, and no, forget it. Yeah. It's
good thing you learned.
Was that before your tour d'affaire with Shannon began?
My tour d'affaire. I'll tell you right now.
Have you finally stopped seeing Shannon?
What?
Where?
There's a story here, folks.
No, there's no story. This is what we do.
It's a trap question, you see. You can't say yes or no. Both answers suck.
All I know is that this is one thing. Whenever Chris says, oh my God, you're going to be the lead in a film, and you're going to be acting against Shannon, if it's a female in any way, shape, or form, I always ask that the theme to my divorce be a good theme for the music, because every time this flute came in when I knew I was going to be making out with Brooke on screen, for my wife, I just called it the theme to my divorce.
It's become a bit of a... Yeah, I'm sorry. You knew this wasn't going to be very organized, right?
Oh, no. I was thinking about it when we were setting this up, and I was like, you know what?
Of all the people,
not even going to try.
Let it go.
Of all the people I've met making movies, Dan is the one person that when we get together, it is train wreck, bus off-road city.
Oh,
I mean,
no!
It's
just,
that's why this could
tangent world.
The perfect storm, though, is Chris and I and Justin, and then when Cookie is in certain moods, watch out. It's the perfect storm of you're going to be laughing your ass off, you're going to be here till late, 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 but you're going to have a hell of a good time.
Exactly. No,
at least you're having a good time. I'm glad that you say those words, because as we've always said 100 million times, we're not doing it for the money. Good God, we're doing it to finish this movie and not go in the hole.
Exactly. And that's the way it is with my sets. I mean, you know, everyone I've worked with, I ask them all, especially new people, how are my sets compared to other people's? And it's always the most, it's pretty much, and they're always trying to find diplomatic ways
they don't
to say, they're kind of, loose and unfocused sometimes. But the thing is that we always get it done.
Yeah,
and I'll say, I challenge any filmmaker out there.
Gloves down.
Dang it. Let's make
backwards.
A movie a year and get it done and release it.
Yeah.
Because I don't know too many, and that's the one thing I'm very, very proud of, is that maybe all my movies aren't the best. And I've made some mistakes, and they're not always, you know, the best movies ever made. But I don't dilly-dally. I get stuff done, and we may be unfocused, and we may be laughing a lot, but we're having a good time. So.
And you're turning out a good product.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And we got the verse.
Well, speaking of good times, I got to tell you, I've listened to every single one of your podcasts.
Thanks, Shervin.
And honestly.
Oh, yay, our listener.
And yeah, right?
Stop saying that you like it in your all your different email addresses.
Whatever, JJ.
Yeah, right. I know. Do you like that? You couldn't tell by the numbers.
Or
a bunch of numbers.
Flynn, is it?
Or is it Kristen with a K?
Oh,
and all. And this is, and I got to tell you, this is all I have to say. Hello, I'm writer, director, producer, and one-time half-awake podcast host Daniel R. for Roosevelt, but really for Ronald Shervin. Most of you know me as Daniel Shervin, the guy who has small roles in large pictures and large roles in smaller pictures. If you've never listened to this podcast before, and I mean this particular podcast, and you may be surprised to know that I am an author also of bad Mimiverse poetry.
Oh, yes.
This is
completely unscripted.
Is one of my poems.
Oh, yay!
I call it The Ballade, putting the wrong emphasis on the incorrect syllable, of Christopher Pretentious R. Mim.
Yes!
By Daniel R. for Roosevelt, but really for Ronald Sherman. Christopher Pretentious R. Mim, a filmmaker, a nerdy Minnesota first, and I, Daniel R. for Roosevelt, but really for Ronald Sherman, co-starred in a film that was arguably his second worst. The Mimiverse has taken us to Phantom Lake and to Mars. To see these screen gems at their best, make sure to see them after dark from the front seat of your cars. Christopher has had many characters throughout his life story, from all of his love for George and Jules to McDonough and Cookie. However, it is his wife and my kids that are the straight-up dookie, y'all. Ah, the verse of Mim, the Mimiverse. All of his movies are a lot like his first, just a little bit crazier and a whole lot better. Also, the Daniel Sherman word of the day is rawr.
That was awesome.
Yay!
I had no idea he was going
to
do that.
I think someone has set the bar for all future podcast guests. You need to prepare something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Like I said, I'm a fan.
Mr. Sherman here has actually thought this through.
Did anybody know he was going to do that?
No.
That was awesome.
And on top of that, I just have to say that as a caveat, to people listening to this, I'm a very opinionated man. I'm approaching middle age. I feel like I've been around the block enough to where I can be opinionated. And if I offend anyone tonight, I am heartily sorry. Send an email complaining about me to Chris.
podcast@st.euphoria.com.
Thank you.
We welcome any and all comments,
also,
questions.
No slash dot.
And concerns.
No slash dot.
Also, I have to say, though, I feel like tonight's podcast is brought to you in partly by the state of Wisconsin. I've heard that name more tonight than I have in, and I've lived here for like 11 years now. It's weird.
Well, and it's not even Sunday.
Well, and you're from
South Dakota.
South Dakota.
Yeah, Sodak, maybe.
Boo. Nah, so, just kidding. I'm sure there's a fan or two there.
Yeah, right.
We have a couple of home states in attendance. We're doing all right.
Yeah. So, as I've been listening to all these podcasts, intently, I might add, I'm a stay-at-home dad. I take care of my daughter, the one daughter that I have before my next daughter gets here.
Before my next daughter gets here, yeah.
Yeah, right. That's what you ever notice how David looks a little bit like me?
I was going to say.
It's true.
Actually, it's kind of creepy.
The only thing that's weird is he has dark-colored eyes where I have green eyes, so it's a little different. But I've had an issue
Dan and
list.
I swap, you see.
We swim. Yeah.
Hey. Yeah. It's his wife from Wisconsin.
I'm waiting until Steph and Teresa hear this. This is going
to
be hilarious.
Maybe when we have Steph on the show, we'll have to have Teresa as well. So
oh,
we
my
can,
God.
And Dan, Dan
oh my God,
Yule we'll over here to join us.
Stop. We'll be in deep trouble. Sorry.
So, you know. Little Springer action going on.
We need to video record that one because there's going to be chairs flying. Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
You know, Daniel, I have something to tell you.
Yeah.
You are not the father. It's a Maury action. That's right.
Actually, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to marry your mom, Jules, and I'm going to start calling you son.
Yeah.
Give me a beer.
I'm going to borrow money.
Awesome. Nice. Do you can things? Or make wine?
Is that a euphemism for something?
No. George, like, made the awesome chili, always canned things and tried to convince you to eat them. And then, like, he would make wine out of anything.
That's true. Well, I need to teach
your son
a few things. So to get back, to bring the bus back on track.
Thank you.
Nice. He has listened to this.
Yep.
He has.
A fan.
I have been listening, and I got to tell you, the whole time, by the end of every episode, I'm like, wow.
God, you know, I wish this really, would end.
That was really good. But there's a crap burger in there a few times, the things that just got on my nerves.
Uh-oh.
I have an issue list.
Oh.
Oh, here
okay,
we go.
Lay it on us.
This is going to go.
And this is from Order of Appearance.
This
by the way,
okay. This would be Sherman's MO. If you're going to do anything, do it publicly.
I'm going to complain about
it. Yeah, no. And this is going out to everybody who's listening to this. And sometimes it's good, bad, ugly, whatever.
Lay on us.
How many are geared toward me? Are you at least going to lampoon, lambaste them a little bit too? Or
we're too easy.
Should
maybe?
I leave?
Or maybe not,
we're
Chris. Maybe you'll just have to listen and find out.
Fine.
Listen to me, son, when I'm talking to you.
Lawn chair of rage.
You could be Jules.
That's what broke the first one.
The first
rage.
Guest that you had was Sid.
Yes.
I really want to talk about Anthony. Anthony, from what I understand, The wood was a little bit wet.
It was early.
It was early in the year. Oh,
when did we actually do that, by the sounds of it,
you maybe weren't the best fire tender. So I am going to ask that if I ever get asked back, we'll see how it works out by this.
Never for another podcast, is what you're saying?
If I ever get asked back for another podcast, I would like Anthony to be my fire tender, if you'll have me back.
Of course.
Thank you. Thank
Got the giant spider movie.
After the giant spider movie, hopefully. With we'll see how that goes. Donna.
We'll slate him in.
What do you think, Chris?
What? Would I want Dan back? Nah.
That's harsh.
There you go.
Okay, wow. Next.
Moving right along, good sir.
I love you personally.
For Mike.
All praise be to the Kaiser.
All praise be to the Kaiser.
That was Kaiser. I feel really bad that your academic advisor is a piece of work there. And I actually wanted to be on as the guest for the month that Cookie was here. And I know you want to be a sportscaster one day, so I downloaded a whole bunch of information for you to get your internship at KFAN, but I think we've already passed that. So I also have the link for the careers page for that. So when you graduate and you know you're trying to get your foot in the door, this is for you.
Oh, that's so thoughtful.
That is so awesome. Daniel Shervin, philanthropist.
Pass that down, dear.
Okay, and now Cookie. Now, first of all, I got to give kudos to Chris because at the time during the Cookie podcast, he said that I called in. No, I didn't. I went and saw Harry Potter, and I was asleep on the couch, and Chris followed up on a few text messages like an hour and a half before, and he woke me up, and I did sound like I was a drunken man on the phone, and I wasn't. I was just waking up. So thank you for that, Chris. But Cookie, you never really answered my question. I know I'm really not your favorite actor, so who is? I want to know that. I really want to know that.
Right. Podcast at SaintEuphoria.com.
Okay. Now, this is also... I hope Shannon doesn't get offended by this.
That's a great way to start excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it really is.
May I ask a question before you get to Shannon?
Yeah.
Nothing for Justin Overlander.
Did I skip over? Oh my God, I did. I skipped over Justin's. And this
are
is
you saying Justin's forgettable, or is it
no.
because you and him
this is one of my favorite
have been
ones
having a tour
here.
At a fair for years?
All right.
What?
With a fair.
So far, Dan has been going in order. We had Sid, and then all praise be to the Michael Kaiser.
Okay,
and then
now here's
Justin Overlander was number three. So go ahead.
Yeah, Justin Overlander is number three. Okay, so here's my issue. He says that movies shouldn't be any longer than 90 minutes. And I want to say, Justin, you're killing me here, man, because citing examples... A New Hope, 123 minutes. Empire Strikes Back, 129 minutes. Return of the Jedi, which I saw as a 10-year-old boy, which then I knew that I was a heterosexual male after seeing Princess Leia in her slave outfit, is 136 minutes. Shawshank Redemption, 142. Fight Club, 139. Scent of a Woman, 157. Every Godfather movie is well over 90 minutes. And then the Clone Wars, the animated series, which is 98 minutes. So by Justin's 90-minute standard...
A child's movie
is the closest to his standard. I find that to be hard to swallow. So, I love you, Justin. No, Justin and I are really good friends. I love him dearly. I really do. He's one of my best friends. And so Shannon, now, okay. So then I ask Cookie. Here we go. Now I go to Shannon. Shannon, I feel your answer to the question regarding Hitchcock's opinion on ask actors being a little too politically correct. I mean, that was way too nice. I realize you're being polite, but that isn't me. So Alfred Hitchcock created an entire genre. As a matter of fact, when people try to emulate his films, they call it very Hitchcockian. Well, you Alfred Hitchcock, good sir, made an incredibly douchebaggian statement. And I hope that doesn't somehow keep you from casting me down the road, whatever. But also,
don't have to tell him he's dead.
I don't know.
Huh? Nothing.
Nothing.
Keep going.
Nothing, Roosevelt. Continue on.
We're laughing with you,
also,
not at you.
I know. Also, kudos on Under the Cherry Moon, Shannon, because I do like that. I mean, obviously, Purple Rain is everybody's favorite, but I even think Under the Cherry Moon, which is damn bizarre. Is better than Graffiti Bridge. Oh my goodness.
Can I go on record and say I think all of Prince's movies actually kind of suck as movies?
No, Purple Rain I actually kind of like. I thought Purple
it's
Rain
It's
not
was... a good movie, but it's great concert footage.
that's probably true.
It's not a particularly good movie.
Purify yourself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka.
It's just cheesy. And a man can't act and he's like 5 foot.
Three.
That's 5'3",
yeah. Does that
That's
make
not
a bad
Mike
movie,
Minnetonka.
Though? Is this going to be a roundtable discussion?
Thank you for
I don't know. I'm just saying. I don't think Prince ever made a good movie.
We talked
think,
about Prince last month. Let's
think,
not
I
do
think,
that this time.
Purple Rain is just one of those, you know, moments in pop culture where it was something, but I just don't think. If Prince wasn't Prince and Purple Rain wasn't as awesome as it is, if you were just to see Purple Rain, the movie, you'd be like, man, that movie kind of sucks. Because it's. Just
well, I kind of look at it. It's like a period piece when I look back at it.
Kinda,
now.
Yeah.
All right,
I mean, because of the hair, because of the makeup, because of the sound. I mean, and we can talk about Prince till we're blue in the face. But I agreed with you 100%. And I have to say, and that every time I buy an album, a new album, it's like, oh my God, why doesn't Prince rock anymore?
You know? But then, a month and a half later, what are you doing?
It's true though.
You're listening to that
agree.
Darn album.
No, I agree.
Front to back.
And also, Shannon, I have to tell you. So Jimmy Norberg ends up winning the silent auction.
Norgard.
What'd I say?
Norberg.
We'll edit it out.
Wow.
No, Drinking Summit. Locally brewed.
We always say that and we never do.
Yeah.
We always say, we'll edit it out. We never do.
It's cool.
We always leave the phrase in.
Yeah, you left the damn Selena joke in, man.
I know.
Selena joke. No,
but it was funny.
It was funny. I heard it. I laughed. All I gotta say is that he won the silent auction at the what is that place called? New Hope Cinema Grill.
Yep.
For the pretty and won your cupcakes. And as he's walking out, I think he knew that it was just diabetes in a tin, you know, because they were just so sugary and they're awesome. And he walks up to me after having probably only two and says, "You have a pregnant wife at home. Why don't you take all these and give them to her?"
Wow.
And I have to give props to him publicly. He's a hell of a nice guy. The first time I ever met him was on the set of Lamb and Fuse, and he was an extra there. And he wasn't.
Lamb and Fuse being a locally produced independent film,
which is premiering tonight at the Twin Cities Film Festival.
Mr. Shervin here is skipping.
I am
to be with us.
Well, it's to be with you.
I'm saying,
also,
did the Lamb and Fuse people offer steak? No.
Nope, they didn't.
All right.
I'm sorry, but the actual premiere for the thing is later on, and I just can't risk being in a theater with. Anyway, so had your cupcakes.
If you got baby on the way.
Well, because, you know, Sherv's wife, my girlfriend, might go into labor. My child.
With your
tonight.
Baby.
That's true.
Yeah,
good thing you guys are both dark haired.
You know, you can't tell the difference. That's the thing. I mean, we look
Norwegian. Like, Norwegian,
yeah, Norwegian
blood
enough, you know. So.
Runs through our veins. But
I got blue eyes. Doesn't your. I mean, my daughter?
Yeah, right. Actually, my
this is terrible.
It's good. This is how it is on the set. If you ever get on the set with us, this is how it is.
Oh, I've been there.
But yeah. So anyway, this is an endorsement for your cupcakes. Outstanding, superlative, above average. If anyone has the opportunity to try your cupcakes, Chris, insert dirty joke here.
I was just going to say actually though that they're so good that
the
pregnant wife
mouth.
Didn't actually get any. Dan didn't. Get them all the way home. He ate them all in the car.
Because they were moist and delicious.
They were moist and delicious.
They melt in your mouth, not in your hand.
They
okay.
They were just pleasing on the tongue, you know? I mean,
they really were.
They were velvety.
Velvety on the tongue.
Velvety
and
on the tongue.
And you know what? They smelt like flowers.
We've lost all praise be to the guys.
No.
He's
so
over
we
here
all.
On the
move
floor
on.
Rolling.
Move on.
He's had a few.
Okay.
We're moving on.
Okay, Chris, I love you, but you really need to shut up about your camera now. It's time.
I love my camera.
He loves it.
However, thank you again for pointing out that you called me and I didn't call you about the cookie thing. So
yeah, see?
See?
Yep. Ruben Hader.
Yeah. Hi.
Keep up the good work.
See?
Rube, you keep the bus on track. And Hader, you're very charismatic. And I really enjoy listening to you guys. You do a hell of a job. And I got to tell you, like it. It kind of reminds me of VeggieTales when they do fake commercials and like silly songs and stuff. Your fake commercials, it's almost like an SNL skit. I really appreciate it. Keep it up.
The commercials are all her idea. I have nothing to do with that.
Well, then, Rube.
She does. Give it up for my rhubarb.
It's true. I'll snap to
hip
that.
Hooray, hip hooray.
Yeah, there we
okay.
go.
And then lastly,
apparently
I'm going to tell you, I agree with all of
whatever.
You about Hollywood. And I can talk about Hollywood because I think I have a lot of friends who are out there right now. Anyway, I agree with all of you guys talking about Hollywood, how the actors nowadays, how they behave, especially, pop culture, people who we consider famous, you know, who maybe got their launch doing a sex tape, then they have a reality TV show. Somehow we consider that a celebrity and they have talent of some sort. You know, I've seen the sex tapes. They're not that talented. The thing is about Star Trek, remakes everything. And I really do think Star Trek is essentially, the new one is a bunch of metrosexual guys in a Mac store. when you look at it with lens flares.
I'll give you that.
Now, can I say one thing, that this is the worst segue ever? You're talking about reality shows and sex tapes. Brooke Lemke.
Where now, she didn't are do you going with this?
No,
she hasn't.
I was just going to say, actually, Brooke Lemke was on a reality show before being in Cave Women on Mars. So,
really?
Can't give too many people too much credit. I don't know about the sex tape.
She hasn't. Not that I know of.
Not that I've seen. not that I will reveal here publicly. So. I mean,
I know. Like, if all places, why would you?
We'll talk more about you. We'll talk more about you and Brooke Lemke later. I got some questions.
My God. We have got questions galore for you. Son.
Okay, and by the way, and I have to say, but however, I do disagree with you guys a little bit on the backstory kind of stuff and things. Like, I agree with you on like Mike Myers, Jason, and Freddie, because their backstory was already told. Why do we do it again?
But
I do like the, like, we got to actually see Vader stuff, which I kind of like that backstory. I mean, they expanded on the Clone Wars.
But didn't you want to kick that little
Yippee!
Boy in the teeth?
There's to some degree, because I really, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm going to go on record saying this. I think they picked the wrong actor.
I think so too. Yeah, I wanted to kick him in the teeth.
I'm sure it was just Jake Lloyd. Everything else was so great in the Phantom
that
Menace.
This is the thing about Phantom Menace and having a complete species of CG characters. I look at it as it was what Jeff Goldblum said in Jurassic Park. It's wondered too much if they could do it versus whether or not they should do it.
Yes.
And they crapped on Star Wars, but it got better after that.
Dude, that was insightful as all get out.
I'll give you that.
Dude, you're welcome. That was awesome.
I want to say one thing about Star Wars since you brought it up, and you
We're
said
just
that
gonna have the Star Wars.
You know, is that I give the prequels crap for being kind of crappy, but at the same time, you know, everyone gives George Lucas so much crap, but at the same time, it's his damn universe to do whatever he wants.
He can do whatever the hell he wants.
And, you know, if we don't like it, I always kind of hate when people are like, you crapped all over my childhood because I saw the prequels and I didn't feel the same way I did when I was 8.
It's because you're 30.
It's like, because you're 30-something. Yeah, exactly. It's like, I see kids who see the prequels. Like, Michael, when the first one came out, was 10, and he loved The Phantom Menace.
Of course.
Because it was made for kids. And the thing is, the originals, trilogy stands up for adults as well, but ultimately, you look at all the people who whine about it, they weren't the adults who saw it in 77, they were the kids.
Yep.
Like us.
Life happens, man.
They were just like, man, I loved that movie when I was 12 or 14 or 8 or whatever. I grew up on it.
What do you think about the changes he went for the Blu-ray launch? I saw the thing with the Ewoks blinking now.
What?
I actually thought the Ewoks looked cool when they blink.
Dude, he totally stole that from me. My bat blinks.
But yeah, it's true. It does.
As does the zombie in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, see, man.
But damn, Lucas. Whatever.
Lucas.
I will say this, though. Like, I mean, when I look at the changes that he's been doing, if he could have known what he was doing before, I think that's what he's doing, is he's going back and doing, because everything is mimicking, you know, the original trilogy. Essentially, everything is retelling it. So I understand the no that he added. I understand why he put it in there, because it's... essentially,
it's a callback to 3.
Yeah, the sins of the father become the sins of the son, and therefore, you know, everything mirrors one another. I get why he's doing that. I don't agree with the Greedo shooting first kind of thing. I think that's kind of dumb. And even Han Solo walking over
Jabba.
What? Dude, what? But at the same time, you said it. It's kind of like your movies. Are you going to be pissed when people say, oh, what you did to your movies was wrong? Are you going to bow down and then change everything back if you do that?
I'm standing with my statement that I've said 100 times. I don't know if I ever said it on audio, but I really think he needs a friend.
Someone to tell him, maybe not a good idea.
Or like we've talked about before, like if you are a great writer, but you're not a great videographer you know what I mean?
I do.
I really think he's so good at doing his own thing. Yes, Miss Tracy.
I agree with the same thing he said about Steven Spielberg putting aliens in all of his movies.
Oh, she just said about Steven Spielberg putting aliens in all of his movies. I see you on that one. I have no opinion on it.
Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull? I mean, you hurt my soul.
You made Shervin cry.
And yet, I actually thought it was a decent movie if you looked at it from just a... Look, it's a big, dumb, like, serial type movie.
We went and saw it in the theater.
I didn't think it was that bad.
I thought it was good.
I sometimes think, and here's the thing. I say these things about.
We had to stop and think ourselves, stop. It's a summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
It's a popcorn film.
Enjoy the popcorn. And I didn't have as big of a problem with it as you did.
Yeah, I didn't either, but I was.
But that's okay.
Here's the thing is, this is what I know where he got it from, too, because if anybody has watched, like, the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, which is probably.
That was
it lasted,
TV
what,
show,
two seasons, maybe?
I think so.
It started off as a miniseries. Okay. It was like a miniseries that it lasted a week, which launched into then became two seasons.
Okay.
One of them was Area 51.
Okay.
And that when he launched, right. So back then, he actually saw the spaceship
stuff.
That crashed and all. That's where it was a continuation of that. That part I respect. But I think when you look at the motion pictures, it's always like the religious artifacts and those kind of things. And that's what people strive for.
Yes.
I mean, when they go to
I think it could be said that these days that a lot of forget it. No,
you need a pipe to start talking like that.
I gotta say one thing though about Star Wars in particular. I am a huge Star Wars fan. Anyone who knows me, I own lots, thousands and thousands of dollars of Star Wars merchandise. And I know I was getting kind of acrimonious about Star Trek last time, but at the same time, what I said about Star Trek though is like, you know. I like the new movie, but I didn't because it also kind of killed my love of Star Trek, and I don't spend money.
Right.
Same thing with Star Wars. You know, if you're really pissed off about it, don't buy it.
Well,
he keeps bringing it out, and people keep paying for it. Paying for it. Bought the Blu-rays.
Did you?
You know, I have no. Yeah, I don't.
Me neither.
I'm probably. Maybe I'll ask for them for Christmas, but I'm not going to go buy them.
Of it. I have it on VHS when I could first get it on VHS. Then I got it for the relaunch VHS. Then I got it on DVD. And then I had to go back and get it on DVD for that 1 month that had the completely unaltered versions of it.
That's the one I bought, yes.
Yeah. So then now it's going to be re-altered again. And one thing I've noticed, too, if I go to my first VHS to my second VHS, like my different copy, or the DVD, it's like, the thing we're talking about where Han Solo walks over him, over Jabba, that's different Jabba. Like, it's always completely different every time.
Well, I do appreciate the time he puts into it. I'll give you that.
I got to say, I think honestly the biggest problem is not that I even really care if he changes little things here and there. So what? It's still at its core Star Wars and they're still awesome movies. I kind of feel like someone needs to actually just pull George Lucas aside and say, do something else. I mean...
Yeah.
Goes it's back like, to what Rube's saying. Hey, somebody, he needs a friend.
Yeah, he needs a friend who's just like, okay, we get it. Can you just say I'm done with this and walk away?
Yeah.
You know, Mitch Gonzalez and I always have these.
Right now.
Yeah, Mitch Gonzalez and I always have these conversations about you reach a point when you're making something, you know, when he's making the masks.
Right.
Or I'm doing these movies or I'm editing. You just at some point say, you know what?
It's done.
It's done. It maybe isn't done to me, but it's done.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what that quote. I think I said it.
Yeah, it was
quote.
In a previous podcast. Basically, I forget who said it, but it was essentially good art is never finished. It's just abandoned.
No, that
exactly.
was George Lucas. He said, George Lucas says, you know.
It was George Lucas who
directors,
said that?
Directors don't, you know, they never really finish their movies. They just. They never really finish their movies. They just, like, it's exactly what you said. But
yeah, they just abandon it. They just give up.
George needs to say, oh, you know what? I got to listen to myself and just walk away and realize I'm never going to finish it and stop trying.
It's different with a movie, though, because like a show, a theater piece, it opens, it closes.
Well, yeah. And, it's,
and you have to like make good choices based on like, okay, opening night is in 14 hours. What can I get done that will make the most impact for what I'm trying to say? A movie, you can push those dates. I mean...
Well, here's a question. Here's a good sort of analogy to this is that, you know, George Lucas keeps going back. To go back to Prince, Purple Rain is a perfect album, as is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I just, I have to say this. I also own every single Prince album, including like the Beautiful Experience, whatever, that came out like three different.
Yeah, the big purple one.
Yeah, yeah. I love Prince. He's
I actually really like that album.
I kind of feel like, you know, you listen to Purple Rain, and it is, honestly, there are very few perfect albums out there. That's one
every
of
single
it's pretty
song
much
is
a perfect
good.
Album.
Yes, it's like perfect from
and
beginning
together,
to end.
And it's together, it's also a good album.
I think Dark Side of the Moon is a perfect album.
Also a perfect album.
It should be listened to from beginning to end. It's an experience unto itself. Every song is great, right? And even if you disagree and don't think Nirvana's all that, Nevermind is a perfect
is
album
all,
for what
great.
It is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And for when it came out and what it created. And where it, just that moment, it was that moment in history.
It was the, I mean, I remember going to the house parties and they would put on Smells Like Teen Spirit. And as soon as the song was over, they'd start it up again, and everybody loved it.
I even remember the exact, one of the few moments in my life, I remember the exact moment I heard Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Me too.
The first time, and it was like, that is unlike anything I've ever heard before.
It was on vinyl, and it was in the basement, the ground level apartment, or level of my dorm, Kramer Hall on Northern State University.
I was in German class. Mike Mason, who played Dr. Frazier, comes in. He has his cassette Walkman, and he says, you have to hear this. And I'm like half asleep because I slept most through high school away. And I said, what? And I put him on, and he goes, listen. And he played that first song, and I was like, holy crap.
I know.
And I'm not even a big Nirvana fan. I admit it. I like Dave Grohl. I like Foo Fighters way better than I like Nirvana.
Me too.
And if that era, I'd rather...
listen to Rev 105.
Yeah, I you know, back then I'd rather listen to Soundgarden or Smashing Pumpkins. I was never a huge Nirvana fan, but I did
never
at least...
Never mind blew me
up. Yeah, I understood it. Anyway, to get back to my point...
Actually, may I continue on? Not to be exclusive with just those three albums, to bring Tracy and I into this, Tracy and I will tell you that... Going. Slayer's Reign in Blood is the perfect metal album. It is the landmark thrash metal album.
Damn.
It has, you guys talk about Nevermind, you talk about Dark Side of the Moon. For Slayer, just to, you know, being all inclusive so that, you know, the metalheads out there aren't going, oh, what about Slayer? Slayer, Reign in Blood is the landmark thrash metal album. All other metal albums have been compared to that and are still compared to that record. And that record came out in what, 85, 86, Trace?
Damn.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
Landmark record. So anyway, I'm sorry, didn't mean it.
Chris, so, I think you're onto something though. There's something special about certain genres that have. I'm trying to think of a different. I love Weezer, the Blue Album for geek rock. I think every song on that is awesome too.
Yeah, good front to back.
Yeah.
Well, and Transformed Man. Yeah, seriously, some Shatner in there. But no, I mean you look at certain things. Anyway, so. To get to this, and this is what we knew would happen when we booked Mr. Shervin here.
This is
what he and I
content.
Do. I'm trying to get to a point, and it's now 10 minutes later. The point is that I'm trying to make about George Lucas changing Star Wars to then reference. People are like, yeah, it's kind of as if Prince said, you know what? I know Purple Rain is good as is, but it needs more horns.
Well, but...
And to go back and add horns, because he originally thought it needed horns. It's kind of like that.
Here's a question, Chris.
Yeah.
Would you go back...
See, people would put up with it from Prince.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
He'd get aggravated.
I need Prince to rock.
Really?
I would be pissed if he added a friggin' full-on horn section to
he went
Purple
too much.
Rain.
The thing is, he went too much jazz. He went too bluesy in some stuff, which I think is kind of neat. But I remember from...
Well, to be fair, he is past Purple Rain, too. Yes. And he won't go back there.
I wish... And the thing is... Oh, by the way, give props. Big props.
Ryland's
bringing the beer.
Me a beer. Yay, Ryland.
But it's
the refresher.
It's like anything, you know, like the Beatles have re-released a couple albums and they stripped them down.
Yes,
yeah, I know what you're saying.
You know, and actually I think that Let It Be Naked is actually better than Let It Be.
Well,
and I like the sound better. You can see more of what they were supposedly going for, which is sort of going back to their roots and taking out all the crazy, we did a lot of drugs,
well, and there's
Sgt. Pepper's-y stuff.
There's been a number of albums from one of my favorite bands, XTC. I heard the album before it came out, and I don't really listen to the album as released. I really prefer, and not because, like, I listened to it first, but I do think the songs are stronger when they're stripped down.
Yeah.
But as compared to George Lucas, he's adding to.
Yeah, and that's
again,
what I mean. It's like Prince adding horns.
Not to make him sound
like
evil. Not to make him sound like evil. But I just think he needs a friend.
So let me bring this back to the Mimiverse, actually. Chris. Right.
Yeah.
Would you... Chris alluded to this in a previous podcast, actually. I think he mentioned he was running out of copies of... It's not that we're going to never...
Let me guess, Cavewoman on Mars, because it's awesome.
Yeah, well, there is that. You're running out of copies of some of your movies. Would you ever go back into some of your movies and edit things?
You know, I have considered.
Have you really?
Okay. I've at times thought about it, but, you know, I also kind of made a pact with myself that I've decided I have to keep, which is when I have a premiere of a movie, whatever I show, that's what it is, and that's how it stays. Because there's a part of me that would really... thinks that if I were to take the time... to recut It Came From Another World, it could actually probably be a little bit of a better movie.
You're saying like a director's cut kind of
well,
a version?
Well, kind of, yeah, but I'd end up taking a bunch out. Re-edited, you know. I mean, they're all director's cuts.
I feel like I'm in a safe environment here.
Yes, go ahead.
It Came From Another World is your worst movie.
Wow,
sorry
you said
to all
it
of you who
loud
think it's number one
mouth
because
I said
you
it
saw
out loud
it first.
It is your worst movie, and I'll be honest, I personally feel that Terror from Beneath the Earth, which I am a part of, is probably your second worst movie, and I'm going to tell you right now, it's something that you have gotten better with over time. It's pacing. It's pacing. It's you becoming a I'm going to tell you, I've watched you. I've known you. I've been almost in every single one of your movies since number three. In some way, shape, or form. So I've been at every premiere. I take it back. I was at It Came From Another World's premiere. So I've been with, ever since your second movie, I've seen it. Chris, you have, like, you started off as a fledgling director, a fledgling editor, and you are getting better and better and better with every single movie. And I look at that and I think that it is a huge compliment to you taking feedback from the people who you trust around you. And I think at a time when you watch your films, like, you realize from audience feedback when you're sitting, like, you listen to it, the laugh didn't happen there, or something didn't happen there, or whatever it is, you're getting better and better and better. And I think that is what is needed to bridge the gap between modern audiences who just don't get it. I mean, there's people who just think, they walk in and think, is this supposed to be like, they don't get that it's like, yeah, an homage picture. They think it's like the skeleton, what the hell?
Lost skeleton of Kadavra.
Yeah, they think it's supposed to be that.
Yeah, when
and
it's
when
not,
it's not, they're
call
like,
me Larry.
What the crap?
Call me.
Well, Dan, spinning off, it's a question we've asked frequently. Wrestle. So the first movie that you saw in the Mimiverse is not your favorite movie?
No.
Really?
It was It Came From Another World. I mean, I don't mean to say it like that. That came out.
No, I gotta say,
I really do think you're the first person who I've ever talked to who the first movie that they saw isn't their favorite movie.
And that was one of Chris's theories too for a long time.
It's
was
one of
that,
my theories also.
Yeah, you guys whatever shared you that the theory. Numbers. I mean, because Rube and I have been there since the beginning, just because she knew him and they were pals and all that stuff. I mean, yes, I have a great affinity for Monster of Phantom Lake, but.
And I can honestly say, I think Monster Phantom Lake is your best picture. I'm sorry for everyone who's involved in the last one because you guys are in our honeymoon period right now over it. But
well, we're burning the set today, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I do think because you set the tone, I specifically remember, Chris, like, there's a certain, you know how you have the music, boom, boom, and it was and you would do these jump cuts to the Phantom Lake, and it was menacing. That music with those images and just the water rippling in the, you know, rippling along the bank and stuff like that.
The dichotomy,
it was menacing.
Of the gentleness.
Yeah, it was, that was good. And I thought that struck a nerve. And the thing is, the only thing that was ridiculous about it was the monster. The actors acted like it was serious. The actors like, which I thought, oh my God, that is great.
I will say, okay, I do have a list of where I think my films rank.
I would love to hear this.
I will not release it publicly. I won't tell anybody. We've discussed it, but I won't put it on a podcast.
Okay,
simply right. Because I don't want people to feel like...
Out of respect for...
Well, you know, some people do tell me, you know, I've many times were like, oh, my favorite is It Came From Another World. Okay, good. I'm glad you liked it. But I have... I look at each one of my films, and I do learn from each one. Now, I will say It Came From Another World was the first time I sort of gave myself permission to... screw up and to make edits and to be critical of my own work, because the Monster of Phantom Lake, I look at it, I remember looking at it and be like, this is the perfect thing, there's nothing wrong with this movie, it's great beginning to end, but there are problems, but I didn't see them because I was too excited that I made a movie.
Yeah,
It Came From the World was the first movie I made where I said, you know what, it's got some problems, and now when I look back on it, I'm like, yeah, it's got probably honestly more problems than others. That doesn't make it a bad movie, but It's not my best work. I admit that.
I just say put it on the spectrum. Put it on the spectrum. Where does it fall?
It's toward the bottom. Yeah. Say that. Terror from Beneath the Earth is, and this is actually going to speak a little toward Monster Phantom Lake and some of the other ones. Terror from Beneath the Earth to me is very special because it's two things. It's the one where it's like half my family. I mean, it's my wife and kids, and yeah, it was very kind of
by
personal.
The way, thank you for not making me kiss her. Because yeah. I honestly thought at the end we were...
Sorry, Michael said my wife and Dan's kids.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I wasn't going to... Yeah, that would be just too weird.
That would have been too weird. And I was like, boy, if we would have had theme music for that, I wonder what that would be, because that's like double divorce.
I mean, I just don't want to watch, you know? I mean, like, you know, Teresa and I, we make sure you're not around. You know what I mean?
Steph and I put mirrors on the ceiling. How
yeah,
do we
you
love to watch
it.
Each
I'm
other?
I'm not there. Anyway. You know,
wow.
Or are you in the closet? Are you like the cuckolding thing? Is that what's going on?
Oh my
dude, it all makes
gracious
sense now.
Crazy.
Anyway, no, so Terror from Neither. The other thing is, and this goes to Monster Phantom Lake. Now, Monster Phantom Lake is like that thing where you kind of get lucky the first time and you make something. You know, it's like you release the a really good first album, you know, and from that point forward, you're just so, like, though, because you what were the hell did I do?
You were driven because you were doing it for your father.
I think so, but I think some of it is that it's a little more, it's much more innocent. I mean, you can tell across the board that there are so many little mistakes, and I was trying really, really hard, and it comes through. It's like there's an honesty and innocence to it that gets lost because over time you get better. You learn tricks. You learn things that, you know, it's like, it's sort of like the, you know,
if
for these cheesy.
If you watch House of Ghosts, this one looks really slick, I mean, compared to.
If you watch cheesy
you
movies.
You get what I'm saying, though.
I do.
You watch Attack of the Crab Monsters by Roger Corman, and there's so many damn mistakes Roger in it, Corman. And it just
makes it charming.
Exactly, and it's the same thing with Monster. I also think Monster Phantom Lake is more popular because, and I figured this out just recently, part of what makes it more popular.
He's got a theory, ladies and gentlemen.
Is that it is the movie that I threw the kitchen sink at. I said, what's every cliche everybody knows about these old movies, and I threw them in there.
That's true.
Okay? It's got the shambling monster. It has the, you know, it has the monster always catches up. It's got the teenagers. It's got the professor. It's got the lame innuendo. It's got the music that's of the period.
By the way, the lame innuendo is what I think that you should hang on to, because I think that's very
well,
funny.
It's still there, Mr., you know.
Yeah,
well, and be
mean,
gentle with the stick or you'll
I don't
miss
know what
the
you
hole.
Mean.
It's got very memorable little things too.
Well,
just today Tracy's like, "Oh, hi, it's good to see you." And we did monster hands at each other.
Yeah, I mean it's just great. There's all these little things where I threw basically
with each other.
I basically threw every cliche that everybody knows into the film. So it's a lot more accessible in that way, cuz you know, Michael has watched a lot of these old movies as I've sort of rediscovered them. He's watched a bunch of them with me. And he knows after watching a lot of those movies that a lot of the people we meet who are even the ones who say, "Oh, I'm a big fan of those old movies," don't actually see them and doesn't actually know them that well. They may see one or two, but they're not really, really well versed in them.
That's true, though.
And we've met a lot of people who are just like, "Oh, I love those old movies. I've seen one or two."
Yeah,
it's like, no. But have you seen them all?
Audience.
Yeah. And so.
Yeah, that's the one that means more if you've seen one.
Right. So, So Monster, I think, is more accessible because people instantly get it, even if you haven't really seen it, because those kinds of, I don't know, a lot of the jokes are kind of more commonly known targets. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those are the iconic images of those old movies that
Including teens walking in the woods.
Just walking randomly.
It's almost like the first Jason or the first Friday the 13th is like, you know the kids at camp.
Yeah, exactly.
Sleepy, whatever.
She showed her boobies. That means
she's
gonna
dead.
Die.
I know, it's true.
So, and that's not to say somehow that I'm better than everyone else because I've seen all these movies, but I think I study them a little more because of what I'm doing.
And Cave Woman on Mars is almost a direct... I see. I told you that I saw that documentary, the 50 worst movies of all time, and it's the girls.
Number 49 was Cavewoman on Mars.
No, number 40. No,
oh,
I was like
no, really?
the Wild Women of something.
Wild Women of Wongo.
Yeah, see, yep. I knew you'd know it. See, there you go.
There's actually a double bill of that played in Indiana once. Cavewoman and Wild Women of Wongo is
That's
perfect.
Awesome.
That is.
But you know, it's and I'm not trying to insult anybody, but I mean, I do meet a lot of people who are fans of these movies because they dig them, but. They maybe haven't seen as many as I have or have really, like, tried to say, okay, that's what they did or that's what they did. So this is what speaks to Terror from Beneath the Earth. And I've said this many times, and I actually had this discussion with a guy who, I won't name him, but he actually works in the major motion picture industry in Hollywood. And he had this discussion about his favorite is Terror from Beneath the Earth. And the reason it's his favorite is because it's the most like the old ones.
That's
the
true.
The pacing of it is... perfect if it were 1954 and
That's
I was
true.
Making a really low-budget movie.
Right.
If you watch a movie
it's
like...
It's very slow, just like all the 50s.
Yeah,
movies.
A lot of those old movies are very slow because it's very, you know, it's that style. You don't see the movie, the monster for an hour, and then he's only on screen for 5 minutes. That's how a lot of those movies were. Terror from Beneath the Earth is the most authentic to that style, to that honest 50s movie. And that's why it doesn't appeal to a lot of more modern audiences.
Yeah,
and that's the thing he was saying is that he didn't like Moon Zombies very much because it was too jokey. And he felt that it wasn't sort of honest enough to that old style because it is a little more... old but mixed with the new. I mean, there's a lot. It's a little more paced, a little faster.
But I think
little,
that's why probably a modern audience is liked. I think the guy who you're talking to is the exception, not the rule.
Well, and some people are like that, you know. Yeah. And Terror, and that's why I like Terror a little. I think it's a little higher on my list because And that's the other reason beyond the sort of family connection. Well, I guess there's three things. And another thing. One more thing is that it is the most classic. I think it stands up as one of the best examples of more of an actual 50s film compared to Cave Woman on Mars, which, I'm sorry, it's paced like a movie from 2006 or
something. I got to say something now that you just, what you just said there, and I am taking this up. This is how Chris and I operate. I'm
getting over it.
Okay,
we'll
so when I've been on some big sets. I mean, and I've been on some really small sets. The first movie I ever did, the guy didn't even have the quality of camera you guys have. I'm not even going to say the name of it. Because, although being the biggest learning experience of my life and making great connections with Matt Feeney, Rachel Grubb.
Hell, it's what got you into Cave Women.
Exactly. It's because of that relationship that I made with the people around me. I'm going to sound like a cheese ball, but I might as well say it. Like, the biggest thing I've ever been on is the people who made Juno reteamed. Is like Jason Reitman, Ivan Reitman's son. The guys who did Juno. I walked down a skyway with Charlize Theron. That's by far the biggest thing I'll probably ever do in my life. I don't say a single word. I mean, and the camera operation was so damn big. I mean, it's being pulled behind like a trailer. Boom, camera. It was like the biggest crane thing I've ever seen in my life. And I'm thinking to myself, I will never get any farther than this in my career. And I realize that. And it's not the smallest thing I've ever been on. Chris is like right in the middle of the road. And when I get on his sets, I think it was Kevin Smith. And I think he said, the studio was giving him crap. Everyone knows Clerks. Everyone knows how big Clerks was. But then when he starts branching out and he's doing Mallrats and things like that, and that was mildly successful. And then after that, I think was Chasing Amy, and the studio was like telling him, "What are you doing? You can't keep putting your friends and relatives and stuff in there," because I think he was dating Joey Lauren Adams at the time.
Yep.
Yes.
And by that time, what is his name? The Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. There you go. Ben Affleck is in it. So those are his pals, right? And they're like, "You can't be putting your pals and your relationships and all this stuff into these movies." And he's like, "Yes, I can. That's why I make movies, to put my friends in." And that is Chris.
Pretty much.
You put your family in it. You put your friends in it. And there's like a handful of people who I consider actual friends. I mean, I baptized two of your children.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's true. I mean, like, Chris is, I mean, if you want to, I mean, sure, it was in your living room and all that stuff. I'm not a real
hippies.
Yeah, I mean, whatever.
You guys are Lutherans. You're hippies. From Minnesota.
You know what I mean? And the thing is, Matt Osterman, Justin Overlander, Matt Feeney, I feel like I'm missing some people in there, and I'm going to feel like a real heel later on. But even like Brooke and Rachel, I mean, they're good. They are good people. I mean, they've gone off to Hollywood. And Emily, she's one person I actually trust around here.
I hear your wife doesn't trust Emily.
Oh, fucking crying out loud.
Your wife doesn't trust Emily either. Sorry, Emily, I know when you hear this, we love you.
If you
bring
hear
the
this.
Bus. Bring
actually,
bus.
Emily, if you hear this, if you listen, honestly, contact me. We'd love to have you as a guest.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris. There you go. Yeah,
Chris.
You go. So, I mean, like, honestly, I can say, like, my best friend, obviously, you, the Osterman family, Matthew Feeney, like, these people who I continuously hang out with. There's a few people that, we should talk about that, too. What is, filmmaking and, I mean, because obviously you're doing your thing, which is a little bit different than other people. We might as well talk about, like, the Twin Cities. Filmmaking, actors, and all that stuff. When we get to it,
eventually, a couple hours.
In hour six.
Only if you step up to the mic, Rylan.
Yeah, come on.
I do want to say one thing while Rylan's coming to the mic, because he has to say something. One thing about the other thing about terror that I don't talk too much about this, but that lends to why it's also important to me, was that after I made Cave Woman on Mars, there was kind of a debacle going on there with. The Shadow Creek Studios distribution deal, and there's a lot of stuff. And after that all sort of fell apart, and I was very bitter about filmmaking.
Oh, me
and,
too.
And
I don't
Terror
trust
from
anybody,
Beneath
hardly.
The Earth was my getting back up on the horse. So to me, and I still think that, and still the bat is actually the most popular monster. Everyone loves the bat.
Sure.
So if nothing else, we made a great monster. And Michael loves the bat. It's his favorite monster. But yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of things about Terror that I will never rank it last, even if it was the worst movie I've ever made, just because to me it's too personal.
Yeah. But. Well, and I'm gonna tell you, like, I will say, going back to that, that was a very ugly time for all of us. I mean, we were, okay, Chris and I were co-workers at one point at a place, and it fell apart, and it actually has made me, it's hard for me to trust people. I mean, like, even, I just feel like I have to voice my opinion always, and like,
yeah. Well, you know, trust
short
first,
of getting it in writing, I need to hear people say things out loud with a witness, you know?
Oh, I want to say one last thing that, before I forget, one more thing, you mentioned about my sets being a little less... I hate the word professional because that sounds like sort of insulting.
Wait, when did I say that?
No, that's not the word I'm looking for, but that's sometimes the word, maybe the best word for it, but is because
Have I ever said that? You said I said that.
You insulted me before.
Oh, girls, you're both...
When?
No, I'm just saying. That's the word I'm trying not to use because that's not what I'm trying to say. Is that my sets are, in essence, a little less quote-unquote professional... But professional, of course, means that you make a living off of it, and I haven't met too many filmmakers that do. They're less formal, I think would be the best way to say it. And it's because what Dan just said, I use friends and family. So it's more like a party and hanging out with your buddies doing something fun. You know, it's like having a garage band.
Yeah.
You know, you're not freaking practicing to play at, you know, Madison Square Garden.
You're doing a street dance, baby.
You're freaking playing covers of goofy ass songs that you think are you know,
at 7th Street Entry. Cause
you're maybe like, oh, dude, we get to play like this dive bar next week. Sweet. Right. That's the equivalent of it. Anyway, Rylan, what do you have to say?
Well, I just wanted to say that I think a lot of the things you get criticized for, people don't realize that you did on purpose.
The
pacing, for example, maybe it's buzzkill humor, like Peter Griffin in Family Guy tripping and hurting his knee for 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I don't know, maybe you have some examples that stand out to you, but I just want to say, I think you know exactly what you do, even when you're getting criticized for it. I think you're doing it on purpose, and if you really stop and think, people, it makes more sense what he did, because he knows what he's doing.
This is why Rylan is awesome.
And I think he gets better and better and better at it.
And damn it, ladies, he's a nice guy and he's got money to give you. I mean. I love Rylan. He's my buddy.
On that note.
Well, I mean, I could even say some examples that struck me, like in Moon Zombies, the opening moon narration. It doesn't make sense. It originally didn't make sense to me, because I wanted to know more about the moon base, not what cavemen thought of the moon. But it, but if you look at it from, maybe this is a journal entry that Dr. Edwards is making after day one, then what he is saying makes far, far more sense, because he would be thinking about what the moon meant.
That's true.
See?
And so it makes a lot more sense what actually happened, even if you want to.
Well, and you do that. You do that sometimes. Like, you do that little intro thing, like the monologue
Jesus.
That happened.
Oh my gosh,
in,
Chris is on fire!
Cavewoman on Mars. You did that too.
Yeah,
yeah.
And Captain Ace Frehley's unending comments about bacteria. Well, reading it as a script, it was
kind
of painful.
What the hell?
But
it's just foreshadowing.
Dan made it enjoyable.
That's true. That's
so, even Mr. Blamire has people telling him his scripts are unreadable, but
call me. I'm Russell.
They make okay
I'll cook
DVDs.
You dinner. I'm a good cook.
Well, and I'm done.
No,
that's cool, dude. No, I hear you. No, I hear exactly what you're saying. And Chris, if I have offended you, you know, I'm just gonna, like I said, I started out with a little caveat. I'll just go back. Sid, if I offended you, please.
No.
Chris, if I offended
you. I will admit, and I'm gonna say this publicly, because we're, you know, this is awesome.
It's a forum of opinion.
It's a forum of opinion.
Yeah.
The only time Dan ever pissed me off, and actually pissed me off, was
that's cool.
After,
I mean,
that,
well, he probably told you,
and no, and it was
surprise.
After that. The incident with the egg salad sandwich. Because it was a little heated. I mean,
I got a little heated because I didn't know Shannon and I didn't know Sid. And
yeah,
I see these guys on auditions all the time.
And it got a little heated. And Dan, you did say something about my sets not being professional. And as soon as you said it, it was like, well, screw you, buddy. And then you walked it back. And like, that's not what I meant. But it was like that one moment, I'm like, well, screw you, man. I don't care. But that was it. And the thing is
on the film.
It's yeah.
I understand. Yeah.
And that was really the only time, because I was like, was like, you're the one who threw the sandwich, man, not me.
Well, I did.
Because I should have reined Liz in, but, admittedly. You know,
but the thing is that maybe if it didn't hit me like square between the eyes, it wouldn't have been that big of a deal.
No.
And at the time, and the thing is, Chris is, okay, and I will say this. Chris does surround himself with family and friends. This last movie was a room where I was surrounded by people who I didn't know.
Except so, Liz, who was flirting with Dan the whole time.
Hi, hi.
Yeah. Liz.
Oh, my God. Liz, come on.
Dan is so old.
Well, I'm
almost 40. Crying out loud.
Let me go back for 1 minute.
You're a powerfully attractive man, as yeah, Mark would say.
Let me go back to...
That you got criticized for that was just really dead.
Yeah, is there something you got criticized for that was legit? I mean, like...
That was legit?
I mean, I'm not saying... Have you been criticized for...
That's the exact opposite of what Rylan asked.
No,
Rylan asked that.
That's what I'm saying,
is that
because that's bullshit. I mean, no, I can't swear. Because that was crap. Right. Like, someone was criticizing you for his dead wrong. I want to know, someone criticized you
for
something?
Those are the people who...
And legit?
Oh, you know, I've been... Like, I think one of the criticisms I got for It Came From the World was that...
Jeez,
I'm on fire
he's
over
on
here.
Fire.
She's really in the wrong spot.
One of the criticisms I got for It Came From the World was that the monster didn't stand out enough and wasn't strong enough. Yeah. And that was by Dwayne Martin of Rogue Cinema. Great site, roguecinema.com. And at the time, I was like, man, so what if it's not the monster Phantom Lake? Because I kind of felt when I was reading that, because he really liked the monster Phantom Lake. I kind of felt like he was more like, I wanted more of the monster Phantom Lake. But over time, I realized that he was right. He was absolutely right. The monster in that is just not strong enough. It's not a... I mean, there's a lot of... Jesus Christ.
Well, dude, you're really lit
the fire's
right
trying to kill me right
Tracy
now.
Tracy is making an awesome fire, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I mean, that criticism was pretty dead on. I mean, the monster in that really wasn't particularly strong. Though Mike Mason did a great job, and I do think there's a lot... I think the speeches he gives are awesome, but overall, it's just... I don't know. It's not particularly menacing or really... By comparison to all the other monsters in all my other movies, it's one of the weakest.
Well, by the way, he was my first interview.
Really?
As the first person who ever interviewed me for anything for whatever. I mean, other than, like, college plays.
He said college plays kind of dismissive, didn't he?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that's 15, 20 years
no,
ago.
No, those are also years. People who you know who are interviewing you for people that you know who no one will see it except for people that you know because... unless
I've been
you're an
going
alumni,
to this high school
go,
for 7 years.
Yeah, you don't go back to college or high school to see your...
Better off dead. Yeah, I understand.
But to bring it back...
Do you know the value of this mountain?
The street value of this mountain? It's snow! I love Better Off Dead.
It's an awesome
my
movie.
$2!
$2!
$2!
So
that
to
love that movie.
Just to bring it back on the road.
Maybe we should ask Dan some questions.
Well, let me bring it back on the road. We'll take a quick like stand and stretch break, and then we'll come back.
Why do we actually? Has it been that long?
Because
for
my
you?
Butt is starting to hurt, honey bunny.
Babe,
I think your butt looks fine.
Ask your question, and then we'll do what we always do.
Oh, very good. Okay, so Shervin, to bring it back full circle, what Rylan was talking about, I think. I mean, I hate to make it sound like George Lucas because we ride him. It's because we love his movies. We've seen him a zillion times. I think he does care. I mean, I really do think that's why he's remaking them. I really do think he is listening eventually to what people are saying and thinking about the product he put out. You know what I mean?
It's, well, when I see him wear a t-shirt that says Han shot first
and I think
he gets his own jokes. I think
so
I know
he's
what,
very smart.
What's happening. I think he.
And
I don't
do
know
think
if,
he
I don't know if the word
edits much like Chris does.
Yes.
And so, yeah. Like I said, I mean, I hate to rip him a butt as if he doesn't care and he's only a money grubbing whore, because sorry.
If I had a $1 billion property, I might be kind of a money grubbing.
Well, and
whore.
The thing is, he doesn't even make movies. I mean, Skywalker's doing pretty good. He could
lighting all my new scenes that I insert into the monster family.
But he is committed to doing 7, 8, and 9, folks. Let's not forget that.
When did he
Chris
commit
is?
To that?
Well, here's the other thing, too, though. After Clone Wars is finally done, he's
Tracy,
doing a live-action miniseries that bridges... this is what I heard. Supposedly, he's doing a live-action miniseries. Mr. Lucas, call me. I think I would do a great job.
He would be a fine, like, relative of Solo.
Of Solo?
Or Skywalker. He'd be fine.
Yeah, Michael's volunteering his... He'll do it for free.
Uh-oh. Don't ever say you'll do it for free, dummy.
Okay, maybe I guess he's looking for... I guess... Oh, look at... Now Michael's all about the money. I see. It's not about the art with you anymore.
What has college done to you?
Whoa.
Jesus.
Let's not like those people on Facebook now.
Hey, Kaiser. Look what happened to Hayden Christensen's career. Where's he? What's he been in since...
Yeah, time out. Where was Hayden Christensen before that?
Girls.
Good point.
But see, the thing is, Michael, you don't necessarily need to get paid to be... in Star Wars, you'd be like, I'll do it for free. And then you just, what's his name, Jeremy Bullock? You just go to all the conventions all over the country and be like, I was Boba Fett.
That's true.
Prove it.
Yeah.
I can't, but I was. I mean, okay. So you just
That's not even his voice anymore when they redid it. Now Temuera Morrison.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying.
Are you joking me?
No, they went back and changed it.
Boba. But it's him in the suit. As far as
he says.
Yeah, exactly. So,
see, look at all I'm missing. All the things I could be complaining about. See, I saw the re-releases.
But this is what I'm talking about. He goes back and he's trying to bridge a gap of 30 years,
yes,
and he's going
lot.
Back. He's actually sort of making it better to some degree in some ways, because you actually know Boba Fett would sound like Jango Fett.
He would.
So we're just such geeks right now. I realize.
Thing is we bitch and we complain, and yet we've seen all the movies.
Yeah, we're supporting and we're paying for them. And
we're still talking about them.
We're still talking about them.
I just realized something I want
to
talk about.
All in all, Lucas wins.
Yeah,
that's true. He always wins. I just realized something I want to talk about. I'm so angry with the Motion Picture Association of America.
What's the MPAA doing?
No, I take it back. Not them. It's the Academy of Motion Picture of Arts and Sciences. I am so mad because I just got in a documentary kind of a mood a few weeks. This is what happens when you have a one-year-old.
You're
sitting at home. I watch a lot of Netflix on my Xbox.
Yes, you do.
I watched just like movies that I'd seen in the past. I kind of want to get reacquainted with, and I've also
Dirty Dancing
and my personal
Footloose.
So
we got
up.
It. Got
girls just want to have fun.
Hey, now
Sarah Jessica Parker. That's when she was good
the
looking.
The fact that you knew that. See?
She was good looking.
I got your number, Sherv.
I'm 38 years old. I've seen a lot of movies.
A lot of crappy ones.
Apparently.
He is confidently heterosexual.
Confidently heterosexual.
I just know that girls want to have fun,
Steph.
All right?
Ask Steph. So, she wants to have fun, dude. Anyway, so.
I'm like cooking over here, dude.
So
scoot back.
I always make a
turn
point
on the other
now,
side so I get some nice and crispy.
Chris and I always have like political conversations because
politics allowed in this zone.
No. But what I'm saying is that he knows my opinion on politics, and I always make it a point to I don't ever want to take a side because as far as I'm concerned, the bipartisan politics of America is going to kill us. So if I listen to if I have to listen to an hour of liberal media, I will listen to an hour of conservative media because I want to know what I want to listen to what both people are saying. So at one point this is like 2 months ago now. I watched Bowling for Columbine just because I really was inspired by some of the questions that he asked, like, why is it that Detroit is the murder capital of the world and you cross the Great Lake into Canada and people live with their doors open?
Absolutely.
That kind of thing. Those are the kind of questions that I really like. I didn't really care about the NRA because, I grew up in the upper Midwest where everybody has a rifle
And you hunt for your food.
The only people who are afraid of firearms are people who probably have inexperience of them, don't know how to treat them with, that kind of, they just fear them.
And how many people have got shot in the entire state of South Dakota recently?
Yeah, right. Exactly. On purpose?
Yeah, but, if you want to get into the gun debate, the problem is with the gun debate.
I wasn't trying to open
the sorry. I just want to say, I think that, honestly, the biggest problem with the gun debate is that you're looking at it from two different perspectives.
Absolutely.
And people, you can't find middle ground because if you grow up in Chicago,
guns
it's
very
different. Guns mean a lot
Montana.
Of different things than if you live in frickin' Montana and you like to shoot, deer or something.
And you get to put it in your freezer and eat it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, gun control being what it is or whatever it should be, like I said, if you grow up in frickin' Compton, it's going to mean something totally different, and it's not a one-size-fits-all thing, and that's the problem.
And it is.
Is that the NRA in particular tries to simplify it like it is, but it's not.
So I watched that movie, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, now I owe it to myself. I guess, arguably, he's a very liberal.
Extremely liberal.
Yeah, extreme. So I thought, okay, so now I got to find something that, and I started, searching through my Netflix key, whatever they have, and I find a movie called Michael Moore Hates America.
Ooh,
and I'm like,
I'd watch that.
I need to watch that. And it's actually Wisconsin. It's a guy from Wisconsin. And he went back through and he went to all the places that Michael Moore. First of all, Michael Moore, single tear coming out of your eye, because of Flint, Michigan and all that stuff. He's not even from Flint, Michigan.
No. Well, and he says some things that are a little bit wrong.
He's not from Flint, Michigan. He went back through to the bank, you know, where the guy bought the gun.
Yeah.
You know, where he went in, he opened up a checking account, and he got a rifle for it. That didn't happen like that at all. No. He interviewed all the people. And it was like all this creative editing and this whole
it's
thing
all
about Charlton Heston, about being this, my cold, dead fingers and all stuff. That's a combination
snippet.
Of edit of like more than
wait a minute. Yeah. Documentary filmmakers will try to get their opinion across by using their footage and creatively editing it. You mean it's not like in the invention of lying, where people just sit there and tell you the truth?
Did you hear a slash irony slash right there?
I know, but like
yeah,
this,
seriously.
What killed me though? No, that's not the part that kills me. Is that he won an Academy Award for lying?
Yes,
for creative editing.
Well, there's lying, and then there's.
No, but okay.
Making a point,
but this is a documentary.
Slightly false memes,
right? But it's a documentary.
But this is a documentary. That's different.
As fact.
That's why.
Wait a minute! You're telling me the Academy Awards are political in
slash
nature?
Irony slash.
That's what I'm so angry about.
You mean? Wait a minute. You mean you're trying to tell me that you think that. Shakespeare in Love.
I guess I'm a pie in the sky kind of guy because I thought
over
anything,
Saving Private Ryan.
Documentaries are supposed to be, and so there's these two brothers. They're French dudes. Please, if someone could like tell me if I'm pronouncing this wrong, it's like Mieslas, like Albert Mieslas or whatever, is actually interviewed in the Michael Moore Hates America. So I go and I look him up or whatever. And he's been doing them since he's in his 20s, and now he's like in his 60s or 70s. And he made the greatest point ever of, you know, when you're doing a documentary, you're not the subject matter, Michael Moore.
Yes.
Your subject is the subject matter, and you, like, let it tell the story. And in a documentary, you document it.
Well, and if I may make a summation point, I was in a film class in grad school, and... It was the same time that Evita came out.
Oh.
Okay. It's fluff. It's got Madonna in it. I mean, but it's sort of based in historical fact, sort of. Okay. So the head of the class sends us all to see this movie, and that's great. I mean, we're watching all kinds of films. So he gets in front of the class, and he was squawking about how angry he was that they made this movie that people are going to take as fact. And every single one of us in the class said, no. And we couldn't figure out why. And then I figured out, well, wait a minute, though, because I was the only one from theater.
Yeah.
I said, it's a musical. No one's going to take it as fact. That's the thing. No one's going to think that Evita Perón was a great person because they're not going to see this movie as history.
Right.
But when you compare it, I suddenly understand his point. When you're talking about a documentary, it's a documentary.
It's a documentary.
It's supposed to be fact.
Yes.
And it's supposed to be more unbiased.
Yes.
Wait a minute.
You guys are...
Are you telling me movies lie occasionally?
No, it's all about spin.
Are you telling me that occasionally Hollywood takes creative license with things that are based on true stories?
Actually, well, but you're talking about fictional things, though.
Wait, are you telling me at the end of Cool Runnings, they didn't pick up their damn bobsled and actually walk it to the finish line?
That wasn't a documentary.
One moment. Nah.
It was based on a true story, though, so that must have happened.
And think about anything.
Wait, you're telling me the Swiss guys weren't actual jerks to them? And that they were actually funded by Americans who had a lot of money?
But here's the thing.
Oh, wait.
That is actually what
happened.
The film professor's point is kind of exactly what you're saying with your slash irony slash, is the American public is cattle, and they don't bother. They will take it as fact. They'll take it. They'll run with these quote-unquote
facts. That's
true. And I'm sorry, you do have an obligation when you say based on true stories... Or when you say documentary, or when you say, like, hello, politics, when you put it on the air and say that you know things.
Yeah, but at the same time...
We don't check, though, because
well, no
we
one does.
Cattle.
History is written by the winners. You think that 90% of the crap we were taught in school is even remotely true?
So if that crazy woman wins, all of a sudden, now Paul Revere's ride...
Yeah, well,
happened differently than
every,
actual
you know, history
fact.
has an interesting way of.
Well, Chris is right though. He actually stole a line. I was actually gonna say this. That actually came from Braveheart at the beginning. He says history is created by those who have killed heroes, and
the winners write the history.
The winner is the one who writes the history.
And you're absolutely
and
right.
It's kind of funny.
It's all through
is it Randall Wallace who actually wrote Braveheart? That is so historically inaccurate.
Absolutely.
Actually, the princess or whatever of France never met William Wallace. They have like a 30-year age difference. Like they were never... It's like all those... I mean, that's just one of the facts, but it's completely false. But that's a fictional story. When you say based, that could... I mean, it's based on a true story, but my whole problem, my issue is the documentary.
I kind of agree.
It's a documentary.
But even documentaries are open to interpretation. I mean, you can take and creatively edit anything. Look at... And I don't care, you know, maybe some of the people out there listening, but you have certain news channels that even to this day will say... Oh, we got a great turnout at this rally, and they're showing, I mean, honest to God, they're showing footage from a different rally. And it's all about perception.
Well, and it's about
selling your idea or what you want.
It's about choosing the correct picture to illustrate what you're trying
exactly.
to show.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not saying that Michael Moore doesn't spin things. He does. He's very good
but
at
for
it.
For me, if you win an Academy Award for that, where is the system of checks and balances?
I sort of agree. We should not reward
but
that with
again,
an award.
Though? Honestly, when it all comes down to it, it's not a court case. It's not under oath. It's freaking, it's entertainment.
No,
that's all.
I agree with that,
That's all
too.
He's doing. He's trying to put butts in seats, sell some tickets, and make some money.
Stuff out of me. Yeah, I find it to be propaganda.
Well, it is, but I'm not saying that Michael Moore is the only one. I mean, there's a lot of
other
people
that do. Are you kidding me right now? If you want to talk about propaganda and the spin machine... We would be here until the sun came up.
I'm of the opinion that I think that ultimately it's a movie. And movies on their face, no matter how accurate you want to be or if you want to make a documentary or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's still, at its core, entertainment. It's like reality television. It's not real. There's a lot of scripted stuff you don't realize.
Well, for sure. I think
it's
mostly
just the
scripted.
Way it is. And if you want to get on any documentary filmmaker for, you know... fluffing the deck or whatever, you know, stacking the deck a little bit.
Fluffing the deck. Dude, is that he got like two references.
Yeah, I'm just saying if you want to get on a documentary film, it's the same thing as reality television. I mean, you think that, they edit things to make it look like, I mean, here's a show that I really like on Food Network. I love Food Network. It's a show Chopped, right? Which is like a reality competition where chefs try to make things out of weird crap and, you know, be the last chef standing. You can tell by the way they edit things that, like the judges, they sometimes will cut to their reaction. And you know that's not the actual reaction they had when that person is talking, but it makes for good TV.
But, okay,
well,
look at...
Remember that girl we met?
Perfect example. Michael speaking. Michael.
Say it. Lincoln, Nebraska. I think it was Lincoln, Nebraska. At that film festival, that lady from American Idol, she was like crazy, right?
Yes.
Didn't she say like they made her do that?
Okay, we were in Lincoln, Nebraska, we met a girl who was tried out for American Idol. And she was featured on it, and she's the one who,
karate chopped
Ryan Seacrest. All right? And the way they edited it made her look 10 times crazier. And the thing is that really happened is that she's an amateur wrestler. And she told him
They tell you to play up your strength.
Yeah, she told him that, and he said, "Oh, do a move on me." And she says, "I can't because if you don't know how to actually deflect it or work against it, because wrestling is fake.
What?
You could actually get hurt." And he said, "Well, can you do something?" And she's like, "I can do this one thing, but it's really not very cool." And they said, "No, do it." And then when they did it, they edited it to make it look like she's this crazy chick who wanted to punch Ryan Seacrest or whatever.
Yeah.
Again, it's the same
principle. But that's not a documentary.
Well, but we
it sure is. It's reality TV, and that's all
documentaries
are.
Look at how we made it Moon Zombies. Did it look like we were in a basement? Did it look like there were only two walls? It's all about the cutting.
I feel like the wool has been pulled over the eyes.
But to be a true documentary...
That's our fault, not theirs.
Yeah, but see, the thing, to be a true documentary, you would actually have to literally put hidden cameras somewhere and have it be edited by a computer, because the editor...
That's not true.
The director...
That is not true.
You're gonna put in your own opinion no matter what. It's just going to happen.
I disagree. If you document events taking place... You know,
but we are not robots. We have emotions, and we're going to look at things and take sides and take opinions. I mean, it's just, it is literally just like filming. A great documentary is filming a kid's soccer game.
Yeah,
it would be better because
that's
it.
That's a true documentary. But if you're making a documentary, you're documenting something. Yes, but at the same time, you're trying to.
But no, you're not supposed to be swaying anybody to anything. You're supposed to be presenting information. The subject matter is supposed to be the subject.
We don't ask for that, though. We award people, and we put butts in seats for things with opinion.
Like nature documentary rules for
people documentary.
I wish everyone would, Rylan. I wish everyone would use nature documentaries as...
Okay. All right. Hold on.
Uh-oh. We got two mics on Rylan. Speak loud.
Lean forward, please. Lean in.
Eva Perón.
We can hear her. Yes, Eva Perón.
Well, after she died, her corpse was plasticized mm-hmm. and then molested.
Well, people felt strongly
about
her.
Wow, that was creepy.
No, but people felt strongly about her, whether they loved her or couldn't fucking stand her. It.
Bleep.
You know, squeaky. But yeah.
Wow. Molested.
I mean, really, I could do that with the Stanley Cup, though, too. I mean, if I were on a hockey team and I won and I got the Stanley Cup for a day, you know what I'd be doing with that thing?
Taking a photo of it, me with squatting in it.
I'd be peeing on it. I'd be taking it for dinner. I would take it to the shower with me. I would rub my juices on it. I mean,
well then.
There you go, buddy.
Okay.
But I want to... But even nature documentaries are still edited for maximum emotional impact.
That's true.
Why the hell else do they show the lion taking down the goddamn antelope?
Yeah.
Is to make you have an emotional response.
Yeah, but, okay,
you can't separate emotion when you're dealing with human matters, especially even documentaries.
Well,
and yes, Michael Moore,
it
was trying to make a political point that is not... And he made it look that like it worked. And I'm not saying that, you know... I'm saying... Anyway, and okay, I agree with you. It was basically not so much a documentary so much as an opinion piece. And Bowling for Columbine was him trying to make a point. And I'm not saying he didn't, you know... And sometimes a documentary may be provocative in a way simply to open the dialogue. It's not necessarily going to set the rule because... Or set the, you know, this is what it is because we're still arguing over it. We're still trying to say, well, but he opened the dialogue, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like movies, you want to be used to stimulate. What the hell is that?
It's an airplane.
It's an airplane.
People don't take it as opinion,
you
though.
See Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will?
Seen Triumph of the Will, or at least the first 20 minutes, and it's really boring.
Sorry about the airplane overhead,
it's
folks.
It's an awesome documentary, isn't it?
I mean, well, it is. It's considered a great, you know, cinematographical, oh, that's not a word, thing.
It's okay.
It's,
you can make
you know,
word.
It's Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will, which is Hitler's big propaganda movie about his big rally in Dusseldorf or wherever it was. But even that is still a documentary, but it is a propaganda piece. Still
a
documentary,
though. I'm just...
And still historically significant.
Me.
Regardless of its political implications of its horribleness
sure.
of the... I'm not saying, oh, it's so what? It's a Nazi film. That's horrible. The Nazis are terrible. But
I guess
it
for
still
me, I feel
is,
like I feel like you shouldn't be lied to in
Nazis.
A documentary. I feel like there should be factual information presented in a factual way.
It should be less of an opinion piece.
It's less of an opinion piece where it's supposed to be presented in a way, you know what? Let the viewer decide for themselves. I'm not going to tell you your opinion for you. You should establish your own
opinion. So are you more angry that he made, in essence, a documentary that is more opinion piece and that it won the Academy Award?
Yeah, just because it's a documentary and it should be an honest piece, not an opinion piece.
But see, I don't think it's... I think the argument isn't necessarily against... I think your anger is on the wrong spot. I think it should be against the Academy and not against Michael Moore.
It is. That's where it is. It's not against Michael Moore.
That's what I'm saying. I think it should be.
No, because Michael Moore asked right questions. Like I said, it was very thought-provoking. It asked the questions of like, why is Detroit the Myrtle? Like I said, but you go across the great, you know, Lake Michigan, it is. It's at the Academy.
But
yes,
even
that's
the Academy,
exactly it.
But even the Academy Awards themselves are political as hell. I mean, you look at this is one thing. I want to say Denzel Washington, right?
Yeah.
He won for
the wrong movie.
He won for the wrong movie.
He you know what? He won for the movie before.
Exactly. And that's it. And that's politics of it.
He
simply won because he deserved it.
I'm sure that's what it
is. And they
no,
were just like,
you.
Well, he should win it, even though this particular movie is not the best example of his work.
I could not agree with you.
And I think that's really all the argument comes down
My to. Argument is with the Academy. Yeah, exactly. It's like, how can you give somebody... an Academy Award when, you know, do a little fact checking or something.
Well, and again, with society, because we don't do as Chris says and start a dialogue. We don't. I mean, when Mark and I were in Vegas, we went to this, like, hey, we'll give you $100 and tickets to a show if you talk to us for half an hour. One of the things they asked was, what do you like and what do you dislike about Vegas? One of the people said they didn't like the people with the little flicky cards.
Oh, it's a flicky card.
They walk by and they have
like a stack of cards and they flick them together and then hand them, try to get your attention and then hand them out.
It's for special ladies who would like to keep you company for the evening.
Yes.
But they specifically do not hand them to you if you've got children. They're only out during certain hours. They're not out when families are out. They're only out in the evening. They said they didn't like those. And I'm like, that should give you the opportunity to talk to your children about correct behavior and your moral beliefs. I'm more offended by every single time you walk into a casino, they say, do you want to buy a timeshare? I'm more offended. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, I know.
I don't
give us 30 minutes of...
I don't have any opportunity to fight back against that where I can start a dialogue with my children, but I'm not an average member of society. I do fact check. I do recognize opinion pieces versus fact, I hope. And, you know, I try to, like you, I try to balance. But at the same time, one thing I have a choice about... And one thing I could turn into a learning experience, whether my views or your views, it doesn't matter. I have a problem with the people trying to, like, they're jumping down your throat trying to sell you crap. Like, I'm in Vegas and trying to enjoy myself.
The whole Mimiverse is built on that.
That's true.
But I guess about the Academy, though, is that...
By the way, I just want to make it... My issue was never about...
Michael
Moore, because he made a great movie. That's why I went back and watched it again.
No, I mean, I say about the Academy, though, is that that's under the impression that...
I was never mad. I actually liked the movie a lot.
But you got to realize that the Academy is made up of people, all of whom have...
Opinions
and politics and personal
whatever. How many people are in the Academy now? I mean, it's like every actor who's ever won one.
It seems like it's like 400 or something. Yeah,
I just think it's one of those things that you're assuming that they're going to be on the up and up and they're going to actually be objective. No, they're not.
That's true. That's very true.
It's like... When you're in high school, were you really surprised when that one person won Homecoming King or whatever? No.
They totally didn't deserve it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like maybe someone else should have or whatever. It's just not the way human society works. It's not the way America works.
I think I've just made it a point. I've been thinking about it for a while.
Land of liars.
I think I need to make a point of making an honest documentary.
Shut up. I would go see it.
You guys, I honestly...
You should let us help you edit it.
And I honestly feel like what it would be, essentially, would be, you know what? Here's like 20 questions, and I'm going to ask all the people who would actually have a legitimate opinion about it. And when I say legitimate, I mean people who are... And I've been thinking about this. It's like the impact of video games on modern culture.
The internet's worse.
Or something.
I've said this before. I think the internet has ruined human society, while at the same time has made my movies possible. So I can't get too mad.
Wow, Chris, that was very poignant right there, buddy.
Actually, though, I got to say one thing. I had this discussion just the other day when I was driving Catherine Hansen home from one of the shoots.
Yeah, you were.
We were talking about how the internet has kind of ruined American society, and then I thought to myself, it's not the internet has ruined American society. It's simply evolving it into something that I'm not necessarily comfortable or familiar with.
And it's the people. There's certain people who take it and manipulate it into a certain way.
It's making us look old because we were talking about how kids these days, they don't know how to talk to each other because they're always texting with their little machines. And I was like, well, we can get pissed, but that's how their society is going to be. And in 30 years,
I won't understand it.
So it's like a glimpse into what it's like to be
80 talk to
and
your
trying
robot.
To understand how to work the VCR when you realize you should have a DVD player.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, were we going to take a break?
I am literally dancing.
Okay,
can we
take
a break?
You can go
back
first.
And then we'll actually talk about the Mimiverse. We'll do some...
We'll actually ask some questions.
Mark will be able to talk a little bit.
I'm so sorry, Mark.
Yeah, Mark.
It's all right.
Mark's just sort of looking at us like...
He hogged the Cook interview.
Actually,
this is going
to
go
I have to admit,
content.
Because I know everybody's dancing. They have to go to the bathroom, so I'm going to drag this out for just two more seconds.
Totally
I actually enjoyed having Rylan on mic for a second there. I actually had to get up to visit the laboratory. So Rylan jumped on the mic, and it was totally cool, and it was actually nice to hear him, because you didn't actually hear him in the last podcast too much.
Leave Britney alone.
If you didn't hear that, that was Rylan saying, I felt it was my moment of leave Britney alone.
And normally we would take a break
We're just gonna. We're just gonna take a look,
we warned you, damn it! This is gonna be a long one.
During 30 seconds of random.
Buckle in.
We're actually gonna. We're gonna do gonna that stop. In the next segment. So
before we go, I posted on Facebook. I'm being podcasted right now. It's true. Mitch Gonzalez asks, "Who's tending the fire?" If we'd like to chime in.
It's Tracy with an E. Tracy.
Tracy with an E. I was gonna let her talk. You want to talk?
We can hear your voice.
Oh, I guess Tracy doesn't
want to
talk.
All right.
Well, she's from Wisconsin. We'll actually talk to Tracy.
This is brought to you by the people of Wisconsin.
That's right.
We'll talk to Tracy in the next segment.
Letter E, the number 13, and the fine people of Wisconsin.
And we should ask her genuine hospitality.
What's your favorite movie?
The Mim movie. What's your favorite Mim movie?
Phantom.
See?
Phantom Lake.
She said Monster Phantom Lake, folks.
I cannot fight it. That's why I'm just going to re-release it.
Babe,
with new special effects.
Get us out of here so I can go punk.
Yes, I will. I will hit the old pause on the machine. We'll come back with, actual, honest Sherman. Questions for Daniel
Mimivers,
R. Sherman.
Questions,
and
Sherman.
Hope you tune in. Thanks a lot. Hold on.
Despite what we just said, that really was the last part of Daniel Shervin's podcast. The good news to report. Ruby made it to the bathroom in time. $50 was not deducted from your bank account to listen to the podcast. And Daniel and Teresa Shervin welcome happy, healthy baby Reagan on the 9th of October at 7 pounds, 5 ounces, and 19 and a quarter inches. Big sister Olivia has decided they can keep her. We would like to thank you for tuning into this edition of the podcast, and we invite you to join us next time when Ruby and Hader warm themselves at the Mimiverse bonfire with Katherine Hansen, who played Advantage Taker, Opportunity Maker, Urena Null in Destination Outer Space. Yes? Until then, follow your path. Don't love your heroes so much that you cheat them of their due. And be sure to keep a rockin' and a rollin'.